Hi, this is Jeff Seymour, and welcome to the podcast. Today I'm going to talk about a variety of things, kind of a potpourri, a cornucopia of concepts and ideas, the do's and don'ts, things that I think actors should avoid, and others, things they should embrace. Let me explain what I mean. First thing I'd like to discuss in this podcast is something that I think is of paramount importance for the success and longevity of the actor and his or her career. And that is stress management. Yeah, this is really very important. And I feel I can talk about it because even though I've had to endure what would seemingly be mountains of stress, stress-related things, just being in the industry, but, you know, whatever. I'm running my own theater, having my own TV show. And, you know, perhaps at the top of that list is just gutting it out in this industry. I feel it's something I can talk about with some authority. You know, one of the first litmus tests that I use for how I've dealt with stress is the fact that my hair is still black. Now, some of you have heard me say this, and when I give this lecture, I will sometimes bring that up. Now, having said that, I'm sure tomorrow I'll wake up and it'll be white, but my hair is very black. Now, people that meet me and know how old I am figure two things. One, either I dye it, which I don't, or two, they'll say, oh, good genes. And while I appreciate that, I can tell you that I come from a family of four boys, and that wasn't the case with anyone else in my family. So, you know, as a controlled test, that theory doesn't work. Now, I would point more to the way an American president looks when they take office and then what their hair does after a short amount of time. So I feel that I can talk about this with some authority. Not that that would be the only gauge, but there's a very apparent one right there. I think what pushed me into really kind of embracing the idea of stress management, of handling things to where it wasn't a detriment to my health, was because I was blessed with the fact that I've been a teacher my whole life, and so I would have to show up in class and, you know, lead them. And being a devout teacher and someone who took my job very seriously and tried to be as selfless about it as I could, I knew that I couldn't bring bad mood into the class, that you can't hide that stuff. And ultimately, I get the most out of my actors by being in a good mood and trying to create a room that is positive and encouraging and fun. And the people that know me, certainly that know me personally, know that I am a bit of a wiseacre. I'm a bit of a jokester. Yes, well, I just find that classes, the days you work, life goes better. If you're laughing and you're having a good time, I feel it makes me a much more effective teacher because we can just laugh through any mishaps and we can get more quickly to the good stuff. We're in a really tricky business, you know. Being that you are the subject of the product, you know, we're filming you and we're moving right in close into your eyeballs, your face. We can see it all. I mean, you know, hopefully we can kind of see your soul coming out of your eyes and face and by your actions and what we're filming. So, you know, it's very difficult to kind of just bite the bullet and bear it. It's a very different type of work. You can't, you know, if you had some physical job, not that, you know, being in a bad mood or sad makes your physical job any less hard, but it's a different standard. I mean, if I had to be a bricklayer, you know, well, conceivably, I could be in a very bad mood. I could have some horrible thing happen and, you know, not have to really do anything to change my mood that day. As long as I kept laying those bricks in a straight line, everything would be fine. But that's not the case in acting. Because on the worst day of your life, you may have to show up on the set and act out the best day of your life. And there are a lot of things that occur that, I think more than any, well, I don't know, I don't want to make blanket statements, but more than most jobs, boy, the highs can be incredibly high and the lows incredibly low. And then by comparison, I don't know how many jobs there are out there where there's such a disparaging difference between the two. I mean, if you've been in this industry and you've had great success and the height of that, what that feels like, and then absolute zero, the depth of that and the distance between those two, I think is what creates the most mental anguish. It's why you hear about many people coming off the rails. I mean, you'd like to say things like, hey, buck up, man. At least you had a shot. At least you had some, you know, good times. You know, suck it up, man. You know, be grateful. Yeah, all of this stuff is really easy to say when it hasn't happened to you. It's hard for people to understand how incredibly difficult this business is to just maintain yourself in. I'm not talking about, hey, it's hard to get a job. No, I'm talking about the mental anguish that you can go through. And so part of today's chat's going to be about perspective. And not just telling you something you might already know, but really explaining the importance in embracing those ideas and quit messing around. You need to embrace them. So stress management. I'll share a few theories. I think one of the things that got me through and kept me walking upright and into my classes, even in my lowest, the lowest moments in my professional career and life, you know, separate from my teaching, would be that I, early on, I think really as a child, having come from this slightly crazy background that I did, I looked at life as a board game. If you're playing a board game with people, you know, we take things very differently. During the board game, we play. We pick the bad card. It doesn't go well. We think, ah! We look at the other cards in our hand, you know, our position on the board, and we use our skills to cope with that and to figure, all right, what's the number I need now? What do I need to do? What do I need to roll? You know, what card should I trade? How do I get out of this? But, you know, we don't take it personally. And those players that do take it personally, yeah, we don't like playing with those people. They throw the dice down. They got to walk outside. And we think, come on, man, it's just a game. You know, I know that life isn't just a game, but what is it really? I mean, do we really know? I'm talking about perspective. It's perspective. It's not like I don't take life seriously. Oh, I do. Well, I have to, because I have to suffer the consequences of my life every day. So, of course, it's serious. But I also know that for me to be a great player at the game, I have to keep my head clear. I have to constantly ascertain what I'm holding in my hands, what I'm picking up, what I'm rolling, and how I'm playing. And at the same time, I would say in this game of life that we play, one of the things that we should keep in mind, and most of us forget, is that we should be enjoying this game. And if we're not enjoying this game, then we're not playing it properly, because that has to really be at the top. Now, you know, I've heard so many things from older people. I remember when I was young and someone would see me and then hadn't seen me after a while. And then they'd say, oh, my God, you know, when you were, I saw you, you were this big. Now you're this. And I remember thinking, yeah, man, it's called growth. Get over it. I always thought these, you know, these things they would say would just be so silly. And I find myself saying those same things now. And I'm sure those kids are rolling their eyes thinking, yeah, it's called growth. There are things that I heard growing up that I don't know, it didn't mean anything to me at the time. But there's one thing that I've heard that makes so much sense to me now, and that is, in some ways, and I don't mean this to be gloomy, how quickly time flies. It just flies so quickly. It's amazing. When you're on this side of it, it seems to crawl. Things never happen quickly enough for us. But then on the other side of it, you look back and you think, are you kidding me? And you start saying your age number and, you know, how long ago, when you first met someone, and you just, it almost feels like a trick. So when I say to you things like, man, you need to embrace every day and you need to have a good time. Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, you just feel like you want to say at times, I'll piss off, you know, but I promise you later you'll look back and you'll go, yeah, I squandered quite a few days waiting for tomorrow. You don't want to think that way. Now, why? Well, I think all of these things help get you centered up as a human being. And that's really what I'm talking about today. How does that? Well, it's everything. This is everything. You know, how does that lead us to better acting, to being more successful? Well, it's everything. It's not just, you know, an idea here. You need to be centered up as a human being, and you need to be able to play this game with consistency, and you need to have your head in the game with consistency, and you need to be in a good mood. You need to be, you know, right with consistency, because when you walk into the room, we can tell. Not that we don't hire injured little birdies from time to time, but generally, we're looking for happy racehorses to walk into the room. That's really what we're looking for. Why? Well, because we can. We're not a soup kitchen. We're looking for, you know, the best and the brightest. We're not looking for fixer-uppers. We're not looking for restoration projects. So not only is this important for the product that you are, but it's important for you to be able to maintain in what may end up being, for most of you, a marathon, an epic marathon. Now, let me say at this juncture that there's some good news here, because when success does come, even if it has been a marathon, I promise you it'll never seem like it came too late. It'll always be perfectly timed, because there is nothing as sweet as success in this industry when it's been your aim to succeed in this industry. I'll give you two quick stories. One, Len Lesser. Many of you know Len Lesser as Uncle Leo on Seinfeld. Len was, he's gone now, but he was a great friend of mine for 25 years. We lived in the same neighborhood, and when I had my theater, I used to see him walking around, and we ended up working together a lot. And I knew Len prior to Seinfeld. And I remember one day when I was complaining about how things weren't happening, he said to me at the time, Jeff, I've been in the business for 40 years, and I had 2 days work this year. Is that fair? Well, that really kind of shut me up, and I thought, wow. And I remember looking at Len and thinking, well, you know, I guess it's over for him, but that's okay. He's had a great career. He's done amazing stuff. He owns his home. He's happy. He does theater all the time, all the time. You know, he's always doing something. Very social fellow. And, you know, that's it. That's the arc. He did it. He's done his life thing, and now he'll do theater until he leaves this earth. And then I remember one day he came to me and he said, hey, I had this crazy audition playing the uncle of some comedian guy thing. And he wasn't even clear on so much of it. And I said, how'd it go? He said, I don't know. They were laughing like crazy, you know. And the thing about Len was, I knew him from early television because I'm that old. So I recognized him when he was walking around on the streets in my neighborhood. He would always go for walks, and that's really how we met. And then I think he came by and saw a show, and then we became friends. But I knew that when we traveled out together, you know, no one knew who he was. If you weren't of a certain age, and I was kind of an aficionado of this stuff, so I watched a lot of television as a kid, so I remembered this guy. No one else did. And when he'd go into the castings, you know, the casting directors would say, oh, hey, so tell me, what have you done, you know? And I always felt, oh, it's so insulting to a man who's done some pretty famous movies, been in some very famous movies, you know, including things like Kelly's Heroes and The Birdman of Alcatraz and, you know, interesting films. And then he got that job, and he became Uncle Leo at, he had to be in his 70s. And, of course, it turned him into a rock star. And then I had the experience of, no matter where we went, people would scream Uncle Leo all of the time, everywhere we went. he was like a rock star. Everyone wanted to shake his hand. You know, I have a convertible, and if the top was down and we were out of light, I mean, people would come up, stick their hands in the car. They want to shake his hand. I tell you what, it was the most thrilling thing in the world for me to witness. My point. You never know when it is going to happen or happen for a second or third time, but I promise you that if you hang in and you keep your wits about you, when it does, it'll be perfectly timed. It's never too late. It certainly wasn't too late for this guy. I'll give you one more story, because actually I met this fellow through Len, and that's James Cromwell. You might know him coming into our consciousness as the farmer in that movie Babe. And he did this movie, got this plum role as this farmer in this crazy movie, Babe. Thought that, you know, perhaps, you know, this might be a chance for him. Finally, after 35 years of really not catching much traction, to suddenly, you know, break out onto the scene. And so he decided that he would take out 4 full-page ads in Variety once a week for 4 weeks. And promote himself and see if he couldn't get nominated for Best Supporting Actor. He spent his own money on it. And it worked. He got the nomination. Now, he didn't win, but it completely changed everything. After 35 years, Jamie still believes in himself, decides to put his own money down, wins the nomination, and from that moment on, there were A scripts waiting for him on his front porch when he got home. Like every day, apparently, there were stacks of scripts out there. And I think he started off doing L.A. Confidential and then Star Trek, and the guy hasn't stopped working. In fact, he's already had a retrospective of his work at the Palm Springs Film Festival. And I passed him one day on the road in L.A., and we stopped, got out, and he was grinning from ear to ear. You know, he looked just like a fellow who thought that success had come at the exact right moment.
So much of what you do is going to be about being able to stay in it long enough. And it'll test your mettle. Oh my goodness, will it? So early on, you might as well, as they say, you know, the saying, you know, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. Oh, I absolutely believe in that. Now, if it happens early, fantastic. But you might as well find a pace and a mental attitude that is telling yourself, I'm in it to win it as long as it takes. Hey, it'd be great if it happened at the next turn. But if it doesn't, you have to be prepared. If this is your thing. Now, look, there's some people, they do it for 5 years. They don't like it. Hey, you got to follow your bliss, man. The most important thing, and I'm going to put this right at the top of the list, find a little joy every single day. Just enjoy it. Learn something. Try and have a good time. Be nice to yourself. Be nice to your friends. You know, take care of yourself. Try and enjoy life. But look, hey, it's your life. You're going to do what you're going to do. But if there were any really kind of older man advice I would give you, I would say do that. But it's most important in acting because, as I keep saying, when you walk into the room, we're always kind of checking a person out for their kind of mental thing. You know, what... are you a problem? Are you a good person? Are you fun? And those things seem to us to be indicative of your station in life. In other words, if you seem to be happy and in control of your existence, and even if you don't have a lot on your resume, if you seem like a winner, that's always more attractive to us. I'm going to keep saying it. We don't hire fixer-uppers. That's not what we do here. We don't have to. Look, perhaps if we were running a theater troupe in Antarctica, yeah, we'd have to kind of, okay, look, this is what we got. Let's pick. It's either this or the penguin, you know, and this is what we'd have to do. But that's not the case. A babillion people show up. We have our choice, every flavor, height, size. We can have whatever we want in the industry. And sometimes we'll wait to find the exact right thing. So being at the top of your game, not just your acting, but just healthy. You know, that's it. We can choose. We're picking the people that are going to be on the island with us. You know, it's not like you have to be physically beautiful. But,
you know, emotionally beautiful, spiritually beautiful. Those would be nice. That would be nice. If I'm going to hang out with you, I don't want problematic people. I don't want sad asses. Come on, man. I mean, I'm getting to engage in the greatest thing of my life. I get to be, you know, do this thing that is my joy, my bliss, to work on a set. Why am I going to hire people that are going to be around and going to be sad asses? I don't want to do that. And do we all have problems? Yeah, absolutely. We're all fighting our battles. Like I said in one of the previous podcasts, you always leave your personal problems, any that you might be going through that particular day, you certainly leave those outside the door before you enter the soundstage or come into the room every single time. And so let me use this moment to tell you one of the big don'ts. Never walk into an audition room and make an excuse or tell us about your story of woe. Ever. Okay, listen to me. Listen to me. Because you people are listening. Go, oh yeah, I'd never do that. And you do it. You do it. You do it in the smallest way. You walk in, you say, yeah, listen, I just got this. My agent, there's a little mess up. I just got this thing. I had three auditions. You know, my transit is on strike. The copier was broken. Yeah, I got this crazy foot thing. You know, it is unbelievable the stuff that people say. The littlest thing that they think is so benign or perhaps, you know, almost cute. You know, my kitty threw up on me and I had to change my shirt. It all kind of just, first of all, goes into the column of, I just met you and you're telling me about some mishap that, of course, none of us give a shit about. And what it sounds like to me is you're an excuse maker. It's an immediate turnoff. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be too picky, but you, all of you listening that are doubting this, you get yourself a chance to go and read for a casting director, any casting situation at all, and you watch what happens. You'll be shocked at the stuff people come in, the first words out of their mouth. And when you do it, you think that, well, I'm being honest. That's what happened. That's why I'm late. That's why I'm a little frazzed. That's why this. That's why that. I'm just telling you, man. Okay, I'll do it. I'll suck it up. I'll get it done now. Yeah, but you know what we're thinking? We're thinking, why would you say that to us right off the bat? And how do we know your cat won't throw up on your shirt on the day that we shoot? Maybe it'll throw up on your shirt and your pants. And then you'll be late or sad or thrown or whatever other malady you're telling us about right now. Why won't it happen on shoot day? I've said this a number of times in podcasts, but there's a big don't right there. Don't do that. You know, when we indulge, for some reason we think we should in this kind of sad-ass mental attitude. We feel like we earned it. Now we're going to sit there in a little puddle of mud and, you know, own it. I always think, why? Why? Why do we have to grieve over these mishaps? Why can't we just pick the card, see what it says, realize, I got a $60 ticket. Must we scream obscenities? Must we bitch about it? Must we take it so personally? You don't take it personally when you pick the card. You realize it was just a pick of the card. It's about survival. It's about treating you, yourself, as best you can. You know, being someone who always has had this joy for working on old cars, I use this analogy. I say, you know, every time that you give yourself grief, that you allow this problem to really kind of enter your bones, it would be like lifting the hood on your car, removing the cap where you put the oil for your engine that's supposed to keep it lubricated and that you're supposed to, you know, change every 3,000 to 5,000 miles, certainly in the old cars, to keep things ticky-boo. It would be like opening that top, taking just a little bit of sand, just a teeny bit, just a little end of your fingers, like, you know, salt almost, and just kind of just drop it right in there where the oil goes and put the top on it. Now, as you can imagine, that's just going to wear your engine out faster. Things aren't going to be running well after a time quite quickly. And then sometimes we take a whole handful, depending on the situation in life. And we do that voluntarily. We do it because we think we have it coming somehow. And it's bullshit. It's sad-ass, indulgent bullshit. Now, I'm going to stress this stuff just for anyone living.
But I would say that certainly for actors, man, you better get in line with this stuff. Because we don't hire sad asses, even for sad ass roles. We don't care. On our side of it, we all have put in our time. We know war is hell. So if you're going to cry about it, yeah, I don't know if we want you in our squad. One of those old sayings that we always hear, it's not the destination, it's the journey. Well, that's such a nice phrase. And we hear it and go, yeah, man, that's so true. And we read it on the card and we think, yes, I second that. And then we end up not living it. I mean, think about what that means. It's the journey. And I don't mean just the slogging one foot in front of the other, you know, thump, thump along, just trying to get there. And this is about, so suck it up, cupcake. No, I think it's about the way we carry ourselves. It's about the way we arrive at our destination, the way that we carry ourselves, the way we think, our philosophy, how we get through it, how we maintain it. I decided early on that what was most important was not just how I handled my problems, but the manner in which I handled my problems. I decided that was part of the game. I decided that part of the game was that when something, you know, not fun occurred, that the first thing that would happen to me, my system would be, all right, this is not good news, let's handle it. And I started making my thing, my ability to bounce back quickly, to figure out what my next avenue of attack would be on it, to quickly extract from it the good and get rid of the bad, that if I was in a bad mood or I felt sad or depressed, I would allow myself that because I would tell myself, well, as an actor, it's important to feel these things. But after about a half a day or a day, that's it. You know, let's move on. I'm interested in playing this game of life very well. And I decided that one of the rules was you got to be chipper. You have to maintain a positivity. And so this just became my thing. It became what I felt I needed to bring to it and that I always monitored whether or not I was doing that and then I was honest with myself. So let me bring you to another don't. It's okay if you don't want to be honest with other people. I mean, it's your life. You know, do what you're going to do. Sometimes it's hard to be honest with other people, and sometimes we don't want to be honest with other people for whatever reason. But try and be honest with yourself. Here's another bit of advice coming from someone who's been living for a while. You don't want to lie to yourself. I mean, if you can avoid it at all costs, you know, in the privacy of your own room, under your covers with your flashlight, when you're having those late night talks with yourself, be honest. Be honest. Be as honest as you can, because this is another thing that's going to help you with your mental health. You know, if you've said, oh, I'm going to do this thing, and then you aren't really, just admit that you're not. You don't have to do that thing. Maybe that thing that you say you're doing is something you ultimately don't want to do. But if you're not honest with yourself, you'll never reflect on it honestly, so you'll never know whether or not you should take a different course of action. And those days that go by, you don't get back. They're done. They're disposable. You can think of them, you can take pictures of them, but you never get them back. So don't waste them. Just be honest with yourself. You know, just if you want to try something and then, you know, it sounds like a great idea. It's a diet. It's a new exercise thing. It's a new study program. It's a goal you have. And that you're not really trying to achieve it day to day. And you hold yourself out as someone who is, yet in the privacy of your own room, you know you're not. Just admit that to yourself. And maybe by admitting that to yourself, that may lead you to some other ideas, and perhaps you'll find that better course of action. Whenever possible, look for the good in things in this industry. You know, one of the things I like about being a teacher who is in the industry is that I actually get to talk about, you know, my experiences in real time. I'm not telling you, yes, back when I was on, you know, Bonanza, this and that happened.
So here are a couple of things kind of recently. One was I had the honor, the pleasure of being called in for a callback to actually read opposite Christoph Waltz for a movie that he's directing. And I was so excited to see that. I thought, oh my God, I like this guy. Now I'm going to go in and read with him. It's insane. You know, and I was so happy about it. And then about halfway through the day, on the day I was supposed to go in, because I was supposed to do a Middle Eastern accent, that was what the bit was, that was what the part was, a diplomat, I was told that he's changed his mind. He wants an English accent. You're educated at Oxford, which can happen for an Iraqi diplomat stationed in Washington, D.C. But I don't do that accent. I mean, you know, I can play. I mean, I saw, you know, Mary Poppins. you know, you can look at something like that and think that I felt that before I heard that, that I might have this role aced. And I suddenly could see myself, you know, in this movie with him and my scene with, I'd have a scene also with Vanessa Redgrave, and how fun would that be? And then I get thrown this curve. You see, because of my philosophy, I immediately had to go into a mode which was, all right, man, you just picked a card at the table and it said, bump, 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 you have to do an English, you know, Oxford educated, you know, accent. In front of a two-time Oscar winner. Now, that would make, you know, many people's ass tighten up, and including mine. But I quickly relaxed it, and I thought to myself, look, here's my perspective. I have been called in by Christoph Waltz. He looked at my tape and thought, yes, bring that guy in with the black hair. That's a thrill to me, and I'll take it there. Then, let's just get in a good mood. Things change. You never know what's going to happen. Let's just go in and give it our best. So that's what I did. I went in trying to be the shiny penny. I tried to impress him with my skills and anything else. We spent 25 minutes together, you know, no camera, just the casting director there and Christoph and I, and it was a delightful afternoon. I don't think it's going to work out because, you know, I don't do that accent. Although I would certainly work on it, and in case he's listening, I swear I will. But perspective, you see. Now, I know a lot of actors that would walk away from that and say, man, I just had it. It was like right there, man. And then I picked this stupid card, and they throw their card down, and they walk away from the table. And, you know, people around them might think, yeah, come on, he has it coming. I mean, geez, you know, that was a big break, and, you know, he could have had it, and he would have been working, but now he doesn't. And come on, man. Why? I don't want to get into this half-empty, half-full thing, but hey, whatever. Here's how I'm going to look at it. I got called in by Christoph Waltz. That's good enough. That's good enough. You know, it's like you guys, when your closest friends, the people that you believe in that are around you in your circle of friends, one of them gets a big job. And you get so despondent. You feel like, come on. You know, why him? Why not me? And you go into a depression. Early on, I thought, you know what those are? Those are success bombs, and they're landing like right beside you. Obviously, you've picked the right people to be in your core group of friends. Obviously, you have taste, which can say, hey, you know, you're one of my tribe here. And look, it happened to you. I think that's those success bombs are getting awfully close. You're obviously traveling with the right group of people. And so here's a do. Always congratulate your friends. Always. Always. Be magnificent about it. You know, most actors don't tell people what's happening with them, especially if they start working, because they know it depresses everyone. It shouldn't depress you. It should excite you, man. And let me tell you what happens. Funny thing starts to happen in your body, in your mind, in who you are. You start becoming this person who isn't threatened, and you become more positive, and then suddenly you come across as someone who is in a way confident, and that leads us to believe you must be successful. And then when you walk into the room, even though all of your friends have been working like crazy and you haven't at all, because you've adopted this philosophy, when you walk in, you seem like a winner to us. And even if your resume is blank, we think, where does this person get all this cheek to be this good? Good for you. And we just imagine a fast racehorse who's user-friendly and non-problematic. And so, if you can combine that with a good skill set, we give you the job. We don't if you're the person who's just so sad because every single one of your friends has gotten a job. And when's your time coming? Hey, man, life owes you nothing. I don't mean that in a bad way. It just doesn't. So what are you complaining about? I guess it wasn't your time yet. But like I said earlier, when it comes, it'll be perfectly timed. And let me tell you something. I've had some success in my life, and I promise you, it is so sweet. It is so sweet. I not too long ago went to network for a cool role on a very sought-after series everyone wanted to be on. I thought that's it. I thought I'm going to network. I'm perfect for the role. There you go. I got a good shot here. And of course, after a couple of weeks, it kicked out. Not before I'd already thought, all right, so let's see. I'll get paid probably. You know, you start going through all this stuff. You could get hit with incredible depression, or you could do what this fool decided to do, and that is say, hey, man, I made it to network on a really big show. I'll take it. I'll take it. It's cool. I also have that added philosophical thing I bring into it, which is, isn't this wonderful that I go through these experiences so that I can actually talk with the people in class about it, in my workshops about it, because I'm really out there and I'm engaging in battle and things are happening and I get to talk about it. And, you know, I can have slightly, more firsthand knowledge about these things. I have found that I am most impressed, having met now all sorts of people throughout my life, I think I am most impressed by the way people carry themselves, by the way people conduct themselves. Meaning, I've seen people with extraordinary success and just ridiculous amounts of money. I didn't like their character at all. And so I thought, while I'd love to have all this stuff that's sitting out here that you own, I wouldn't want to be you. You don't look like you're having fun. You don't look like you are fun. You look like you've allowed all of this stuff to really kind of rob you of any kind of funness. Is that important? If it isn't, what is? Because, you know, you don't get to take all that stuff. So at the end of your life, what do you got? What do you have? Years of toil? I mean, if you were willing to accept the idea that perhaps at the end of our life, if we were allowed to take anything, if this really was a part of a journey, if you believed in any of that stuff, it would seem to me the only thing you do get to take is what you have actually evolved to, is the wisdom you've gained, the person you've become, the soul that you've nurtured. So can't we focus on that at the same time? And don't you know, by focusing on that at the same time, by tending to that particular garden, like a very special bonsai plant, that act, that doing that right there, would actually enable you to endure the trials and tribulations of life that more expertly. Because when these storms were occurring and all these ups and downs were occurring, you were always the first one on deck to make sure that you, your machinery, was in good nick. You were taking care of yourself. You were making sure that you were manning all the stations to make sure that you took care of yourself first and foremost. You were there as your own life coach to say, all right, let that go, let that go, let that go. You're not in competition with that guy. Let that go. All right, let's go. It's like you're your own best personal coach, life coach, sitting there with yourself telling you, it's all right. Hey, man, you got to network, didn't you? Well, you got to meet Christoph Waltz. You know how many people on the street out there didn't? Good for you. Great. I'll get the next one. Why not? Doesn't that make sense? Or do you want to be a little crybaby in the corner? I almost got a job at Christoph Waltz. And then he said, and then I went there and they said, you can't do that. I said, and then I thought, well, why not? I mean, I don't know. You know, come on, man. What are we, two? Right? Stop being so critical of everything.
Yeah, I noticed when I, mostly when I had my theater, because I could see people in real time and I was watching them and in the lobby afterwards. You know, I made this. It changed my life, this observation I made. We'd have shows, you know, it did well. Some of them were funny. I'd see people's legs and arms flying up in the air. And then there'd be this guy I could see from the back. It just wasn't moving. It's like staring at the ground. And I thought, what, come on. What, why are you so uptight that everyone around you is dying? And I know what good and bad is. I mean, look, this, there's no way this show sucked as bad as he was behaving. And then afterwards in the lobby, this fellow who came with his girlfriend, who was a friend with someone in the show, would be staring at the ground like, you know, I can't even look up to make eye contact. I hated this stuff so much. I just got to get out of here. My skin's crawling. Hey, we all have a right to our opinion. But I thought to myself, I'd think, really? Could it really have been that bad? Because you seem angry. I also had huge movie stars come to the theater. I mean, you know, now this was a while back, but, you know, Warren Beatty and Annette Bening and Shirley MacLaine and Diane Keaton. And, you know, I mean, a high level of people would come in and see these shows. And the thing I noticed about them is that after the show, they were the ones that always wanted to congratulate the actors. Now, I've told this story before, but it really had a huge impact on me. And I looked at that and I thought, now, why is that? Is this just like a charitable contribution? Oh, you little people, you did okay. Let me say hello to you and share my magnificence with you. Perhaps. But what I thought it was them realizing how hard it is to get anything done and how tough it is to really be good at things. But you see, the people that don't do a lot of things don't know that. Here's what I've noticed. The people that work a lot tend not to be as critical. The people that don't work very much are incredibly critical. Yeah. It's easy to be critical, folks. Let me tell you what's tougher to do. Go out and do something. Go out and do it. And then do it successfully. And then do that a few times. And then see how you feel about other people's work. I don't think you'll be as critical. You won't care as much. It won't matter. You'll realize that we're all trying our best. You know, when you go and see a horrible play, they're not trying to do a horrible play. They're trying as hard as they can to do a great play. So you want to make fun of that? Why? They tried. They didn't see you out in the audience go, hey, Karen's out there. Let's really make this show suck. They're trying their hearts out to do the best. Why do we need to treat them like they're lepers after the show? What's the problem? People always have opinions about things. They'll ask me my opinion about things. I get paid for my opinion. I would never give you my opinion. Why? Well, it's not my show. Are you asking me would I do it differently? Yeah, probably. Would I direct it differently? Yeah, probably. Would I produce this differently? Maybe, you know. Unless it was some brilliant thing, then I'd say, yeah, I'd do it just like that, of course. But what does it matter? Here's what matters. If you think you know the way, by all means, please show us. Educate us. Let us see how it is supposed to be done, maestro. Show it to us. Please do it. Stop talking about it and show us how it's done. Write the thing. Film the thing. Create the thing. Direct the thing. Show us. Please. We all would like to be entertained by your wonderful work and educated by what you show us. Absolutely. You see, that's what I always tell people. I say, you go off and you do it and show us how it's done. And we will all suckle at the breast of your greatness. But in the meantime, shut up. Shut up. What are you going to do? Educate us on how it should be done? Yeah, you know what I like? I like people who actually do the thing. Because talk is cheap, man. It's so cheap. It's so easy to point stuff out. Let me tell you, I've been humbled the most in my life when I've had the opportunity to do things. People ask me what it was like having your own TV show. Humbling. Humbling. The best part of having your own show, oh, you get to make all the decisions. It's all me. I'm writing it. I'm in it. I get to do everything. It's the best part. Here's the worst part. It's all me. I get to make all the decisions. I get to do everything. I write it. I'm in it. It's great when you're great, and it's absolutely an ass kicker when it doesn't work, and you sit there thinking, boy, this shit is hard. It looks so easy when you see good stuff. When you watch a great movie, you think, yeah, that's how I'd do it. That's how I'd act it, just like that. Yeah, now you try it. Show us what it's like.
Because once you get your big mug out there in front of the camera, it's a completely different thing, man. And maybe it's not. But as I said, we will suckle at the breast of your greatness. Just show us, all right? So stop being so critical. And what does this lead you back to? It leads you back to this place of kind of a spiritual neutral buoyancy where you're just right there. You're okay. You're just right there. When you walk in the room, you end up coming in kind of like already a very successful human being because you seem centered and comfortable. You seem to have figured out life a little bit. You've found joy in it. You seem to get through every day with more positives than negatives. You seem to have figured out how to manage stress, which is so important. I remember when I was running my theater, critically, we did very well. And for a time, I remember there being a break in the 80s where suddenly it seemed that just people weren't going to theater as much. In the early days, you'd get a, you know, Critics' Choice in the LA Times, maybe coupled with Pick of the Week in the LA Weekly out there. And when I saw that, I thought, okay, I'm sold out till we close, you know, till we stop the run, we're done. And then that didn't matter as much anymore. And because I wasn't subsidized and I'd never rented out and I didn't have a troupe that paid, it was all up to my classes and the box office receipts. And that's how I survived. That was my product. And I will admit that at this particular time, I was just crushed. I was crushed, and I actually, in my home, which also had the offices in it, which was beside the theater, I just fell to the ground. I was broken. I was just broken. And my lovely woman that worked with me at the time, I remember seeing her standing in the doorway of my office, and listen, I'm an artist. I guess I was emotional. Forgive me, but she was crying. She felt so bad. She didn't know what to do. And the Gipper had crumbled. I was actually lying on the floor, and I didn't know what to do. And I remember it was a hardwood floor. I remember with one eye, you know, right into the wood, and the other eye kind of looking out across the floor. I remember looking out, and I remember this image of seeing these little dust bunnies. And I thought, two things. One, Jeff, it doesn't get any lower than this. I mean, literally, I couldn't get any lower. I had shoved my face down into the hardwood floor. I could not get any lower. That was it. I was at the bottom. And then I thought, boy, those are a lot of dust bunnies. This floor needs sweeping. And I realized that since I couldn't sink any lower, and since those dust bunnies weren't going to clean themselves up, perhaps I should go get a broom and get back to work. I've thought of that many times throughout my career. I've thought, well, you can either lay here and stare out at those dust bunnies, or Jeff, you can get up and do something about it. So, I would like to leave you with the dust bunny story. I would like to leave you with that idea of not voluntarily putting any sand into that motor. Of treating yourself like a fine bonsai plant and understanding that success may take a while, but when it comes, it is so sweet. And I want you to think of Len Lesser and Jamie Cromwell and understand that, yes, it truly is about the journey and not the destination, but during your journey, you want to make sure that you're in good nick the entire time. Mainly because you want to enjoy your life, folks. Oh, listen, I've got my fingers crossed for you. I hope it happens. I really want this to happen for you because I know it's important. You're listening to this podcast. You're really knuckling down. You're looking for any kind of anything in order to get you moving down the road. I'm happy to be a part of that. But you don't want to look back at wasted days because you kept living for tomorrow. And this industry is all about tomorrow. That's what keeps us going, because our life can change so quickly. And it has for me so many times. And you people out there know what I'm talking about, you know. Wednesday, you don't know what's going to happen. And then on Thursday, you got this audition. And then Friday, you get the job. And then next week, you're in a show. I mean, that unfortunately is the absolute seduction of this business, right? It's like pulling down on that one-armed bandit. Okay, maybe on the next one, you know, I get three cherries there. I want you to take what I'm talking about today very, very seriously, because I promise you, this is as important as having entertainment skills. All the best. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Real Life Actor Podcast. This is Jeff Seymour. Please subscribe. Let us know you're listening on social media and feel free to email us at jeff@reallifeactor.com with any questions you'd like me to answer on the air. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.